Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. HagmanReport.com is HagmanReport.com. There you can find video, audio, all your necessary needs. Drill down. You can subscribe to us on Rumble as well as on Spreaker. Whatever your pleasure, subscribe to us on Rumble and Brighteon for the video. Please do that, and because that does help the visibility of the algorithms and such. So appreciate you doing that. With me right now is John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. Before I get to John, I want to apologize about yesterday. Once again, we had we did not have a show yesterday. It seems like Mondays are kind of critical in terms of what we're doing here on a investigative level. Now, I received an email from somebody saying, well, you know, you did this before. What's the problem? What's the problem, basically? You should be able to do a show and what you were doing before. Well, what we're doing very, very quickly, what we're doing now is a lot different than just normal investigative work. This involves numerous agencies. This involves overlap into things that I don't even want to get into today.
Does that person go to the same job?
I'm not sure what that means, but I'm slow on the uptake today.
Does that person have two jobs and at the same time, different locations?
Yeah. I don't know, but thank you for that. Yeah, Eric the tech, you get it, and the folks I know that most of you get it. But the fact of the matter is, we're just having trouble with doing 20 things at once and doing at least one well. So, okay, but having said that, I do have we're going to have a Patreon meeting this Sunday, okay, Patreon meeting this Sunday for Sunday of the month, and I do have some major announcements for the Patreon members, and I'm going to get into some things somewhat like the last time, but not as necessarily one-sided or structured, maybe just half of that one-sided and structured and then open for conversation, and that's this coming Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Patreon meeting this Sunday. All right, with me, John Moore, thelibertyman.com, but I want to show this as I bring John Moore on. This is from Breitbart. Galileo, I mentioned this yesterday in Galileo. It came out in Breitbart, I believe, today. Cuomo, knock on the door, toss them in the, put people in cars, drive them and get the vaccine, as they put it, in their arm. This is a new level of fascism, folks. And this is coming to a town, an area near you. Okay. And you have to ask yourself, why? Why? What's the deal here? And of course, we know why. We know what the deal is. I think we do. But here to clear up a lot of this, and folks, you can go to Breitbart and look at this. Andrew Cuomo, New York governor. Yeah, we're going to knock on your door. We're going to put you in the car. Maybe they should have said, cattle car, and then drive you to get you jabbed, right? Well, with more information about this and more, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Love the guy. I'll tell you what, a lot of respect for him. He's a homicide detective, much like myself. We have similar backgrounds, except John was in the military, served honorably during Vietnam, was over in theater at that point in country in Vietnam, of course, and earned his stripes. But with me, John Moore. John, thanks for your patience from yesterday, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Doug. Good to be with you, sir.
It's good to have you. So, where are we here, brother?
Well, there's a gentleman named Dr. Richard Fleming. He has a PhD. He's a law school graduate and a medical school graduate. Most of his adult life, he's been a scientist, publishing scientific papers and, of course, doing medical work as a doctor. He's gone public in Dallas doing a four-hour presentation. It's on my website at thelibertyman.com. We're now up to 11 panels of COVID information and vaccine information. It's panel number 11 at the top in yellow highlighter. And during his presentation, he presents the evidence that you and I are used to seeing. This consists of emails, letters, and patents showing not only the clear evidence of a criminal conspiracy, but showing that these men and women began years before winter of 2020 with their patents and letters and emails going back and forth, documenting the criminal conspiracy to develop the COVID-19 and to develop the vaccines. It's devastating if you're in the CDC and if you're Anthony Fauci and if you're a Democrat. It's devastating because it basically opens up and reveals the widespread criminal conspiracy that's been going on for years, going back for at least 10 or 11 years, Doug, maybe longer. Some of the evidence he presents goes back to the 1990s in terms of the development of these COVID-19 variants, I guess you could say, the technology that went into it. What was very revealing, and I must admit, I've watched 1 hour, 10 minutes out of a 4 hour presentation, so I still have 3 hours to go. But what was very revealing to me was the involvement of Fort Meade, Maryland, which is where they've developed chemical biological weapons there for decades, and the Department of Defense funding these efforts to enhance these vaccines, what they call I'm blanking out on what they call that, but it's something that makes it stronger and more powerful. They've been funding that, the Department of Defense.
Are you talking about gain of function?
Gain of function, yes, sir. What's the mission of the Department of Defense? To kill people and blow things up. That's what the Department of Defense does.
It used to be Department of War, but yeah.
Right, right. So a friend of mine, he has a relative involved in public health up in Alaska, and she told her brother, my friend, that the Army was up there, this is about 15, 20 years ago, exhuming victims of the 1918 Spanish flu. And they told my friend's sister, oh, we're doing this so we can help people with medicine. And my friend asked his sister, what's the mission statement of the Department of Defense? It's not to develop medicine and vaccines, it's to kill people. And here they are digging up a virus that killed tens of millions of people, because there was, it was all over the planet and record keeping was almost non-existent. So here they are exhuming, 15, 20 years ago, the bodies of people who died of the 1918 Spanish flu and taking it back to their laboratory so they can have the pure virus. I understand, Doug, that in the wild right now, all over the world, the scientists can still find the remnants of the 1918 Spanish flu, but over the decades, it's mutated to the point where it's harmless. But remnants can still be located almost anywhere on the planet. The point being, Doug, with Dr. Fleming's work, presentation he did in Dallas, it should be a game changer. Now, we've seen lots of good evidence, and I got plenty of it on my website, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and others, showing bits and pieces of this conspiracy. What Dr. Fleming does is pull it all together in one nice package so that everybody can make sense of it and have all the dots connected. Previously, and with the information we've got from Dr. Mike Yaden, for example, and others, highly qualified individuals, we had a bit of the picture here, a bit of the picture there, and no cohesiveness and no connecting of the dots. That's what Dr. Fleming does. He connects all the dots of the CDC, the Wuhan laboratory, Dr. Fauci, Little North Carolina, the various pharmaceutical companies involved in this, the Department of Defense. All the players are put together in a comprehensible, well-connected package so you can make sense of it, Doug. That's what Dr. Fleming has put together. His work is phenomenal, very detailed. I wouldn't want to, I don't, you know, I don't have the connections to do what he did, but you and I have both put together, complex legal matters for decades. And, the complexity of this is mind boggling.
I'm glad you said that because I don't think people understand your familiarity, mine, with complex, legal and, the criminal civil matters. Okay. Because we've done that. Now, when you're looking at this, this is, throw in the medical aspect of things and it just makes it even more mind blowing. But, John, I've got a question here and this is something that I'm hearing. I can't source it. I mean, I could source it, but I'm not going to. The push for everyone to get the jab is now underway. I mean, we're not talking about, oh, we're going to kind of, you know, gently nudge. The carrot's gone, the stick is here, and the consequences will be had. What in the heck is going on? Why are some of the, you know, for example, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, well, you know, follow your heart, fill, you know, why some of the politicians, including even DeSantis to some extent, why are these people all of a sudden jumping the bandwagon and saying, yeah, you know, maybe you should get the jab? What's changed? What's going on? And I want answers, John. I want to know why. Did they sell out? Or are we just, are you and I just absolutely nuts along with every doctor that you point out from Dr. McCullough to Tenpenny to, my question is, you know, everyone seems to have lost their nut. Okay. And I'm getting really, really tired about it. So, I mean, what can you tell me about this?
Well, if we had Ms. Huckabee in an interrogation room, maybe we could get some answers. Our Governor DeSantis. It's one of two things, or a combination of promises or threats. Promises and or threats. That's why these high level people are making these statements. Huckabee knows very well, as does Sanders, that these COVID shots are not FDA approved, that they're not a vaccine. They know that the animal testing for previous attempts all ended with all the animals dying. That's not a secret. And of course they know that. These are very bright people. They're very well-read people. They're very informed people. So I can't speak, because I don't know and you don't know what's in their heart, why they've gone public with these statements that are at least tripping around the edge of saying, go ahead and do it. Apparently Huckabee is not really saying that you should do it. She's saying that you should search your own heart before you do it. Is that what she's saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of
nebulous.
Yeah. And it's got some plausible deniability in there. But what I'm seeing on the chatter side, John, is I'm seeing, okay, you know, essentially this. Two things, and they're parallel. And I look for parallels too. I look for things that are happening once and such, like you do, you know, and I see the push. Okay. So there's two things going on that concern me greatly. The segregation of the vaxxed v unvaxxed, the people who received this jab and those who don't are going to be punished for not. Okay, I see that taking place, which is extremely troubling, because now if you decide not to get the jab, you're going to be denied services. You're going to be denied a whole lot of things. So consistent with that, follow me here, not you, everyone else. Consistent with that, I see the increased rhetoric that's rising along with the FBI and the federal law enforcement saying, okay, now we are going to increase at the same rate almost our efforts to silence those people who talk about that, the vax, if you will, fake vax, non-vax vax, as well as the conservative Christian right who are pro-freedom, more libertarian than anything else, okay, you know, live and let live kind of thing. We're going to clamp down on them. So you've got the law enforcement side going up very, very in tandem with this political side going up, and they're working together against two groups of people that happen to share some of the same ideology, if that makes sense. What's going on? Well, I mean, that's what I see.
The powers that be are very sensitive to the alternative media. They're very fearful of the alternative media, and they want to control the alternative media. Our outreach is growing, and the numbers that are generated by certain members of the alternative media, such as Mike Adams and others, you are one of them, of course, Doug, and to a lesser extent, I am. Those numbers are in the millions of people when you add them all together. And that makes them very fearful that millions of Americans will wake up to the truth. And
do you see, John, and I don't mean to over-talk you, but do you see a point? Because I worry about, or not worry, I can see this coming, where you, me, and others like us are going to be put into a kind of a box, walled off on the internet. Don't go there. These people are dangerous. These people are misinformation, disinformation agents, meaning you and I, and including our guests, including the people that you bring out, the doctors, the patriots. So do you see a time when all of a sudden we're going to be
silenced? Well, that's already happened. I have a Facebook page. I have a personal one and one for my radio show. If I attempt to send a note on my radio show or my personal one with my website, it will be kicked out. So I have to have a clever way of putting my website on there so that the AI won't recognize it as my website. So I'll do the.libertyman.com or something like that, something silly that lets people figure out what my website is without having the AI kick in and eliminate my note that I'm writing. So that's already happening, Doug. And I dropped YouTube earlier this year, around the first of the year, because of censorship. I now use Rumble, and I'm about to get back on Brighteon. We were doing Brighteon last year, but just got distracted and dropped it, but we're getting back on Brighteon, so that we'll be on uncensored platforms, Doug. That's very important to have an uncensored platform. And that's what you have with Brighteon. That's what you have with Rumble and some others.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And however, what's it going to take people to break their habit of going to YouTube, with a puppy dog and rainbow unicorn farts and stuff like that? It just amazes me that they have such a market share and they refuse or somehow don't know to go elsewhere. But okay, I get it.
Well, we do what we can, Doug. Word of mouth spreads the word. YouTube does not censor everything. So a lot of good information still gets out on YouTube. The AI is doing that censorship. It's kind of funny. I would get dinged for a copyright violation for some things like bumper music I would use. Yeah. But when somebody would take my copyrighted work, my DVDs, and make a whole new DVD using my work, I couldn't get YouTube to even pay attention to that.
Exactly. It's maddening, So. But there's people behind this, and I have to say this: Alex Jones was right when he was got in the face of that Punjab guy or whatever, for whatever social media platform that was, and Susan Wojnicki or whatever her name is from YouTube. How do you even describe the time in which we find ourselves? It's just beyond any kind of comprehension of any kind of. Really,
well, we've known for years, Doug, that hard times were ahead for us. That's no secret. What we didn't know was the form they would take. I wrote my paper. It's a free download at my website. No need for panic. One of the things I mentioned was that people would pay attention to orders that they thought would protect them from a disease. I wrote that 15 years ago, and that's proven to be true. Most people, most of the time, will follow orders that they think will protect them from a disease. That's what we've seen for the past year and a half with these COVID lockdowns, the mask wearing, and the social distancing, all that silly stuff that most Americans have been doing. most of the time, either because they thought it was the right thing to do or they had no choice. It was just announced in the last day or two that the Veterans Administration is requiring all healthcare workers to get the vaccine. I hope there's a lot of resignations, and I also hope that maybe some of the VA workers will pretend to give it to each other, which that's been going on for decades in hospitals and clinics and places like that, where the workers all agree they don't want the flu shot, and they pretend to give it to each other so they can keep their jobs. There'll be a lot of that going on also in the VA and any other healthcare facility that's mandating these vaccines.
But John, is that, and let me ask you, and of course I would ask the audience this as well. See, to me, that's playing games. Now, I get that because sometimes you have to kind of do that to fight another day. But to me, that also does a disservice not only to ourselves, but a disservice to our children and their children. Because I'm done playing games. I'm done saying, you know, yeah, we'll roll over. Yeah, okay. You want me to wear a mask? It's just a mask. No, it's not a mask. It's a mind control device. It's a symbol of compliance and abeyance. Enough of this crap, okay? Enough of this 1%, you know, what, 200 people roughly, 300 people, four, I don't know, maybe even if there's 1,000 people in the United States that were calling the shots. Well, there's, you know, 300 and some odd million of us, and out of that, probably 100 million who are pretty damn pissed off, and we're ready to, you know, so we have you outnumbered. And don't give me this crap either about, well, we got nukes, and we got tanks, and we got this, and we got that. You can shove those right up here, you know, because we have the will, and we have God on our side. Most importantly, God on our side. We have righteousness on our side, and it's about time we put these morons in their place, in my view.
Well, I agree. I agree. And we're already seeing the riots in the streets in France and other places. Americans tend to be more polite in that regard. The French have been described as a rather strange people, which I love the French people, but they're already rioting in the streets over the COVID restrictions and the vaccinations. And we should be seeing that here. I recall it's been just about a year ago that Orthodox Jews in New York City were burning masks in a barbecue pit. It's we're late starters when it comes to that, Doug, to civil disobedience. But this next round of mask wearing and lockdowns may finally get Americans riled up to the point where they will get in the street. It's hard to say what's going to work to get them in the street, but maybe that will.
You know, and I'm glad you said that because, again, one of the things I'm saying, Eric said my hair's fluffy, and that's because I was out in the wind. No, I'm not going to tell the story. No, it involves bloodshed, and I don't want to.
Come on. Tell your story.
No, I'm not going to tell my story. No, it's a sad story. Anyway.
A woman fell down today, cracked her head open on the pavement. Doug was downtown, and he assisted her, so he had blood all over himself. At least that's the story.
And I'm sticking to it, okay? No one was hurt. Anyway, aside from the woman. But, yeah, that's true. And And I had a rush to get to the studio in time because of all that stuff. And, you know, the push for new lockdowns is coming. You could see it, and they're planning for it. And lockdown 2.0, John, where you live, you know, you're fortunate enough to have, I think, a group of people who are rational, sane.
Well, they are. I live in Crawford County, Missouri, about 100 miles southwest of St. Louis. The lawn of the courthouse has a 6-foot-tall stone Christian cross on the front of the courthouse, and foot-tall black letters on a white background. It says, "In God We Trust." All the county sheriff's department patrol cars have "In God We Trust" stenciled on them. We begin every public meeting in Crawford County by saying the Pledge of Allegiance. They have prayers at school functions here. Yes, we think normal. I recall, it's been about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, one of the local young men had died in, you know, in the Middle East in war. And, there was a, his body was going to be driven through town. And everybody knew the time of that, funeral procession, and it was delayed. In the meantime, it started raining, and, hundreds of people were standing in the rain waiting for this young man's, hearse to drive past. That's the town I live in.
It makes almost your, I don't even know how to say it.
It's a town of only 1,600 people.
Yeah.
Only 1,600 people, and hundreds of people were lining the main street of Steelville, Missouri for the young soldier's body.
You know,
real past.
That makes me have a lot of faith in humanity. And I
in
know
the rain,
they're good people.
Waiting in the rain.
In the rain. See, that, and yet you've got BLM that wouldn't come out in the rain, and, you know, it's just, okay. Yeah. And one of the things that I noticed when I was in your state, Missouri, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the state cars on the back bumper, In God We Trust. Is that the Missouri Highway Patrol?
Most likely. I don't recall specifically, but yeah. Most likely.
I pulled up. I was behind a state cop, and I shouldn't say pulled up. I was doing like 70 miles an hour following him, and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. So I took a picture while I'm driving, and of the In God We Trust. But anyway, yeah, it's just so, but see, here's my issue. We are about ready to see, and I think it's going to come out around school time. We're about ready to see, this going into a kind of a hot, violent confrontation between those people who are saying you've got to, you know, you're going to be locked down, and those who are saying, no, we're not going to be locked down, or you've got to have the jab. No, we're not going to take the jab, or, you're going to get fired if you don't. Well, okay, then it's on, baby. And even worse, you're not coming into the store if you're not, you know, if you don't have the jab. And I've been seeing other stores, and this is in open forums, where big signs saying, hey, if you, it, only those unvaccinated, admitted. And of course, you know, the word vaccine in quotation marks. So, you know, the divide is so great that we're, I don't know. It's going
to
be
more of a political statement. There's no way to tell who was vaccinated and who wasn't.
Your volume disappeared, John.
Okay.
Unless I went deaf.
Okay. I don't know.
Okay.
Am I back?
No, not if you, not unless you shout, brother. I don't know if you, I don't know what kind of mic you're using. So, let's see. Now you're, now I can't hear anything. Well, folks, a little bit better. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Do it harder.
Okay. okay. I'll see if there's a setting for this. I don't.
It almost sounds like somebody threw a pillow over your mic, but,
there's nothing. I didn't change anything. I don't know.
You know, it's. We're going to try to reconnect because I don't want a word wasted here. So leave and then click or drop out and then click your link and we're going to reconnect that way, if you know what I mean. All right, we in progress. Okay, so. You know, looking at the spate of headlines today. Oh, and I do want to mention this. Mark Wayne Mullen, who is a Republican congressman, actually, and this is on Liberty Daily, actually hugged the murderer of the unarmed veteran Ashley Babbitt and said, you know what? You did the right thing, brother. Okay, now, I don't. And the 1-6 commission, let me know when we're back. The 1-6 commission, which, you know, many Republicans were essentially not welcome, is going to, I really believe, is really going to create an environment of, it's going to be like It's going to be hunting season for conservative Christians, for patriots, for anyone who followed President Trump. And you may say, wait a minute, it's been that. You know, why do you keep saying that? It's been that way. No, you don't understand. It's going to get much worse. I put out an alert in Galileo today where, according to the information I have now, intel chatter, is that the feds are going to partner up with the blue state Democrat people, corporations, and governors, and they are going to really warrantless search your social media, warrantless search your text messages, and even, well, with any other venue. So that puts us on the chopping block, and certainly under the microscope, as well as John Moore and anyone else who speaks this way. This is a new level of going after, what's that? Okay, I'm going to try you now. John, you there? I don't know, folks. Those listening on the radio, my apologies for the dead air, but you can see my frustration. Look at my face. Does it look frustrated? It should be. All right. So, John, John, Eric the Tech is going to try to reconnect with you on a different platform. So if that makes any difference, or if that has any difference. All right. So, again, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Folks, go ahead and bookmark his website, thelibertyman.com. That is thelibertyman.com. And he's got a show every day, Monday through Friday. Not, you know, he doesn't it's 5 days a week, not like us. Okay, sometimes we miss a day. But it's good. And you can listen to him right there from your front page, from the front page. And don't forget to scroll down for all of the articles and the videos that he was talking about, numerous panels on this COVID-1984 or SARS-CoV-2. And it's interesting, too, my wife and I were speaking this morning about, she said, well, aren't the cases down because of the jab, because of the vaccine? And I said, did you just say what I think you said? And she said, yeah. And of course she knows what we know, but she said, aren't the cases down? And I said, no, the way they are, counting the cases is different, thus creating a false or a real negative, I guess, the fact that there are few cases, which should have been from day one because of the PCR test, you know, it was all bogus essentially from the first day. So we have a better, in my view, a better reading, a more accurate reading of whatever this Chinese Communist Party bioweapon is than we did initially, if you understand what I'm saying. So, well, it looks like, well, wait a second, the jab is working. No, it's not that. It's a different way to audit the cases. And I'm not saying there are no cases, because there are. But having said that, again, it's just that way. John, are you there, brother?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
100%. There we go. There it is.
Okay. All right.
We can't see you, but we can hear you.
We got video, but for some reason the audio isn't working.
We have audio, but the video is not working. So.
Correct, yes. Right.
So you know what we're going to do? We're going to put your website up there, because I want people to go there. Folks, if you haven't done so, and I say this all the time, and people say, okay, and I'm guilty of this too. Leave it up there. John's website is full of great information, and it's updated. So, folks, there it is. As a reminder to those watching, there it is. Bookmark. Go there. Listen. Read. I'm telling you. TheLibertyMan.com. That's the place to go. And also support John through all of his endeavors. Scroll through his entire website. You can spend a couple of days, a couple of weeks there, actually, with all of the information that contains. All right, John. Now that I just mumbled and bumbled through that mess, I'm going to kick it back to you.
You did well. You did well, Doug.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, you and I, you know, besides being homicide detectives, we're also broadcast journalists. And I look at one as complementing the other. I use the skills I developed over the past half century the same way you do, to find witnesses and take statements, get the word out to people. We may not be preparing reports for our prosecutors and attorneys or chiefs of police, but we're still reporting. And that's the job of a broadcast journalist, is to report, and that's what we do. Instead of having to report to one prosecutor or one attorney, we're reporting to tens of thousands of people our findings. And the consequences, at least in the case of the COVID shots, is literally a matter of life and death for literally millions of people. That's about as serious as it gets. We're looking at, and going back to Dr. Richard Fleming's work, what Dr. Fleming has done is put together the evidence, the clear and convincing evidence, as we use in our trade, Doug, that a massive criminal conspiracy has been taking place for many years and continues as we speak. A criminal conspiracy that will, we know already, will result in tens of millions of people dying, and possibly tens of millions of more people dying as they continue to roll up their sleeves and get these jabs in their arm, having poison injected into their arm that will eventually either totally disable them or kill them. So our jobs as broadcast journalists has a very serious side to it, Doug. Sometimes we have fun with it and so forth, but this part of our job is very serious as anything can be. We're looking at the most serious international crime against humanity ever committed. And that's not a flippant statement. I'm not taking this out of context.
Why? And why can't people see that for what it is? And I have a hard time because I look at these... this really dug in dogmatic segment of society saying, you know what? Thank God for this vaccine. Thank God for this. Why the disconnect? Why the polar opposite?
Well, it's called normalcy bias. And there's plenty of media examples of it. One of the more fun was, this film that was made called Apocalypto, I think it was, about the ancient Aztecs in South America. And so the Aztec adult male is standing on the edge of the ocean, and there is a very large Spanish galleon sitting right in front of him, but he can't see it because he's never seen anything like that before. He doesn't know anything like that even exists. And finally, he saw the disruption in the water to get his attention that something was wrong there. And he finally was able to see the Spanish galleon sitting in the water in front of him. That's a pretty extreme example of normalcy bias. Example that young soldiers are trained is to hit the dirt when they hear gunfire. Most civilians rubberneck and look around to see what's happening. One of the things that's done in basic training is to teach young soldiers to hit the dirt when they hear gunfire, as opposed to doing what civilians do, which is to rubberneck and look around, try to see what's going on. Normalcy bias. It may not be a very good example.
Now I get the idea, though. Yeah.
But
it seems
people,
like...
People want to...
It just seems like there's more... The more information... For example, Dr. Fleming. The more information that's coming forth about microclots, for example, and other things, the less the people want to hear, and they close their,
Well, if they've already been, got the COVID shot, they may as well close their eyes and have a happy life until they die. I'm sorry to say that, but that's the way it is. However, if they have not been vaccinated, or if they know people, say, children that so forth, that haven't been vaccinated. And by the way, the make-believe President Biden last Wednesday at the CDC announced that they'll soon have vaccinations for children under 12 years old. So even for a vaccinated person, they can still wake up, hopefully, and warn other people to not get vaccinated or prevent a child from getting vaccinated, as the case may be. So there's the odds of somebody who's been vaccinated waking up and smelling the coughing, the detective's choice coughing, and waking up to reality is pretty minimal, but we need to keep trying. My primary focus is on the unvaccinated. I regard the majority of people who have taken the COVID shot as being finished, as being walking dead, in other words. That's an unfortunate truth, but that's my reality. But as far as waking people up, look what we have to deal with here, Doug, in terms of the American population. We have nearly half of the American adults in this country are either semi-literate or illiterate. Well, there's half the adults gone right there in terms of cognitive ability. If they can't read effectively, the odds of them understanding very much by verbal communication is pretty minimal also, I would say. I don't regard illiterate people as having the best cognitive ability. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a lot of them do, but I don't regard illiterate people as having a lot of cognitive ability.
Is it illiterate or indoctrinated as opposed to illiterate or both?
No, it's both.
Okay.
And we've had these discussions in the past, but we always have a new audience. Yes. So there's always new people. My generation, I graduated from high school in 1966. The highest SAT scores ever recorded were the year I graduated, 1966. And that's 55 years ago. They've gone down every year since. Now, they've artificially attempted to raise the SAT scores by changing the tests to artificially raise the scores. But reality is, for every year, for more than half a century, the SAT scores have gone down. Now, I attribute that directly to the Dick and Jane readers brought into the school systems in the 1930s to begin the process of converting from teaching children phonics to sight reading. Now, the teachers I had still taught phonics because that's what they knew how to teach the English language properly, which is the use of phonics. But by the early to mid-60s, the teachers who taught phonics were retired, and the teachers who were then teaching the youngsters in the lower grades no longer taught phonics because they didn't know phonics. They couldn't teach phonics.
Yeah.
And the Dick and Jane readers were in full bloom teaching children sight reading, which forever, if you taught sight reading, your vocabulary is forever limited to a few thousand words. Forever, because you can't figure out new words. Phonics teaches you to figure out words you're not familiar with. Sight reading doesn't.
You know, I gotta tell you this, John. Never has your statement been so proved in my view. As people might know, I've got grandchildren, quite a few actually, but I've had the occasion to see my grandchildren and other friends, their children in different settings and different schools being of the same age. And what you just said there, okay, I'm not saying my grandchildren are, you know, smart or anything like that. They are, and they're the smartest, but okay. But what I'm saying is the teachings offered by the different schools, not daycare centers, but schools, creates a much different outcome with the child in terms of both communication and understanding. And I thought of you, when you said phonics, I thought of you because that was the first time I heard the word phonics in a long time in a school setting was with one of my grandchildren. So anyway, so you're right.
Well, it became a national scandal in the late 1970s, early 80s, somewhere in there, the lack of teaching phonics, and a private company started out a program called Hooked on Phonics, which was major popularity nationwide. The school started teaching phonics, but it's been haphazard. I know locally one of the school districts hadn't started teaching phonics until the grade six. Well, that's too late. You've lost the kids by then, by grade six. Phonics needs to begin in kindergarten and first grade at the latest. My son-in-law, great husband, great father, great provider, top salesman for the company he worked for nationwide. He says, John, if I want to read something, I have to close the door, have complete silence, and really focus on what it is I want to read. Otherwise, I can't, because it's difficult. Now, he's being quite open with me and quite frank. But for people under age 50, reading, for the most part, now, obviously, there's exceptions. But for most Americans under age 50, most of the time, reading is not something fun. Reading is not something pleasurable. Reading is not something they do unless they have no choice. Now, that's, unfortunately, most adults in this country under age 50 most of the time. And, of course, there's notable exceptions. And God, thank you, God, for that, because we'd be completely lost if there wasn't. Homeschooled youngsters, the schools that had had a good education and were taught phonics at an early age, they do read for fun and they read for pleasure. And thank goodness we have those, because we'd be hopelessly lost without them. But for many Americans, it's just simply reading is something that they don't do for fun or pleasure, because they can't. They can't, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And the level of ignorance in this country about certain things is phenomenal. There was a actor named Robert Young.
Oh, yeah.
And when it comes to medical matters, this is good. Your younger people would like this. Robert Young played a medical doctor named Marcus Welby, MD, and that was the name of the show, the TV show. Hugely popular. In their time frame, they beat everybody. Marcus Welby, MD, weekly TV show.
I used to watch it all the time.
Robert Young, the actor, pretending to be a medical doctor, he got letters written from the literate people, hundreds of letters a week, asking for medical advice. Now, this is from the literate part of our population. So, and that was, what, 55, 60 years ago when that TV show was popular. And you probably still see it on YouTube. I don't know. I haven't looked. But that's a good example of the level of ignorance of medical matters in this country, when people will sit down and write a letter to an actor pretending to be a doctor, asking that actor pretending to be a doctor for medical advice. It's
yeah.
Pretty sad commentary.
It is, and we see that. That also is, in my view, is a statement of how well programming works. Television programming works on the general population. You know.
Now, in terms of general ignorance, I'm going to talk about a friend of mine. I will protect his identity. He's an Air Force veteran, graduate of a brick and mortar university with a 4-year degree. He wrote a book in his chosen profession that was published by a mainstream publisher, ran his own business that he owned with as many as 4 to 6 employees. That's a nice sized payroll to meet every week. Nice home, nice family, kids, grandkids. Great guy. Smart guy. Industrious, productive guy. Now, with all that said, he did not know Doug. He did not know. There was a difference between a state senator and a United States senator. He didn't know that. You're breathless.
That's a deliberate.
You're speechless.
That's deliberate. Because this, to me, is war declared upon us.
How can that happen?
I get the.
How is that possible?
How is that? You're right, and I get the fact that you've got people out there who are jagoffs in school. Okay, I get that. But when you're at that level and not know the difference between the U.S. and a state senator, okay, then there are issues at play here. And I believe if you're not intentionally stupid, and if you're not in. I'm not making fun of learning, anyone with learning disabilities. I'm not, but there is a war for your mind out there. And that's tagline of InfoWars, but there's a war for your mind. And I think that includes general knowledge, especially of our government and of civics. But again, the multiple issues there, but you're right. How is that even possible is obviously a rhetorical question. But yes.
If it was a low IQ man or woman who dropped out of school in the ninth grade and had never done anything with their life, and if that person did not know that there was between a U.S. senator and a state senator, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked at all. But when somebody who's reached the level when you're writing, $6,000 or $8,000 a week in paychecks, and you published a book in your chosen career, and you've been successful in every measure of our society. Now, when that person doesn't know, I'm shocked, I'm surprised, and I'm disappointed. But I know he's not alone. But that's the point.
Yeah.
There's tens of thousands, maybe millions of Americans who don't know the difference between a U.S. senator and a state senator. But let's go back a little bit to who votes. Whoever influences the most illiterate voters will win any and all elections, because the percentage of illiterate and semi-literate voters is so high. That's an unfortunate truth, but that is the truth.
Yeah. And boy, I'll tell you what, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, John, and I think you and I are on the same page. I believe that we should have a test. You want to vote? Let's have a test. Okay. And I don't know, what
in our lifetimes, it's when this thing is broken, when this thing being our republic, when it's broken, whoever puts it back together, and I hope I'm alive to see that happen.
Me too.
Needs to put in place protocols to prevent what we're experiencing now from happening again.
Yeah.
But what can you do? Oh, well, here's what we got. We got federal money influencing what's taught in these schools, in these elementary schools and high schools. We need to have local school boards exercising local control over what's taught in these schools.
And this is where Mama Bears come in. Mama Bears, I love you guys out there.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely. There's nothing in the Constitution about the federal government being involved in education. That's simply not there.
Yep.
And in 1776, the founding fathers would not have tolerated that. They knew about education. Thomas Jefferson could write in Latin with one hand and Greek in the other at the same time.
Yeah, so
did you know
I.
That?
Yeah. In your dreams. I was going to say, I can barely write English with my right hand, okay? I write a note to Eric, and he has to go to my wife and says, what does this say? You know, yeah. So anyway.
There may be a human being in the United States who can write in Greek and Latin at the same time. I'm not aware that person exists. I doubt any of them hold any important political office in this country at any level.
Wait a second. I'm still trying to get over is Guam going to tip over? Hank Johnson. Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. I know. It's just, you know, it's maddening, John. It really is maddening, my friend.
Well, the witness should have got an Academy Award for not making an idiot out of the congressman.
I wouldn't have lasted. I wouldn't have lasted. I would have said, you know, what in the world is the matter with you? You know, what's wrong with you, man? You know, really? Because, of course, Snopes came out and says, well, he was just joking. You know, yeah, my patootie is joking.
No, that was no joke.
Yeah.
No, that was a joke. No, the Republic is in great peril for a lot of reasons. Going back to this is so foundational, maybe it deserves a bit more airtime. The education system we had to teach English to youngsters in the early part of the 20th century worked perfectly to teach 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds the English language, how to read, write, and speak the English language. There was nothing wrong with it. There was nothing broken about it. And these PhD educational professionals decided to change something that didn't need to be changed. There's nothing wrong or broken or improper with the educational system we had of teaching English, which is phonics.
Yes.
So why would you take something that was in perfect condition, not broken, worked perfectly well, and was bringing up American youngsters to learn the English language properly? Why would you change it at all with something that doesn't work?
Precisely.
Exactly.
And you know, one thing.
Well, look what was happening. Oh, look, well, I need to interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
1930s, the Roosevelt administration.
Yep.
older and wiser men at the time were warning about the socialist communist implications of what Franklin Roosevelt was doing. And that was part of it, too. Going from phonics to sight reading was part of the Roosevelt administration to change this country and harm this country. I'm absolutely convinced of it.
Oh, 100%. And how many people don't know that? And I think it's important that, you know, John, what you said earlier, I think you and I need to really present the evidence, I guess in our vernacular, in terms of what happened back then, how it's carried through, and now how it's carried through even more hideously with the critical race
theory.
Well,
there's another aspect of this, and that's being able to read and write in cursive.
Yes.
Most public schools have dropped teaching cursive writing, which means a high school graduate who wasn't taught cursive writing could walk into a magnificent, large, beautiful building in Washington, D.C., where one of the original copies of the Declaration of Independence is there under guard, and not be able to read it.
You know,
how tragic is that?
Deliberately tragic.
To be a high school graduate and not be able to read the Declaration of Independence.
Yes. Yes.
To open your first checking account and not have a signature for your checks.
I'm convinced that people are, you know, and I hate that. This is why I hate these emojis. Okay, somebody sends me a text with an emoji. I go ballistic. I don't want to see those. It's hieroglyphics. You go from cursive to emojis. You know, what next? Stickmen, you know, for your signature? It's a bunch of crap, and we need to stop it. And that's why the mama bears out there who are so, you know, I love the passion behind them saying to the school boards, no, you're not going to teach, for example, teach critical race theory, Common Core, whatever it might be. You're going to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic because this is America.
And to teach youngsters that a really big explosion created some of the most complex living organisms ever created.
The hand of God, my friend. John, I am so sorry. We are out of time. Thanks for your abbreviated visit today.
We'll do it again next week. Maybe Tuesdays are better for us. What do you think?
You know what, brother? We're going to have to revamp some things, and I want to tell you something. You're going to be a part of it. I love you, man. Thanks for all you do. Keep doing what you're doing. And folks, John Moore, TheLiberyMan.com. Please tune into his radio show.
Thank you, sir. God bless you, brother.
All right. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report right here on the Global Star Radio Network. Going to be right back. It's Tuesdays with Stan. Stay where you're at. Welcome back, folks, to hour number two of the Hagman Report. Doug Hagman right here at the helm. Look, I'm driving. Brr. Okay, there we go. Where truth can't be silenced. We're not going to allow truth to be silenced right here on this platform. HagmanReport.com. Two ends on Hagman. Please visit the website. Bookmark the website. There you're going to find segments, shows, segments with Stan Dow, like coming right up here. And of course, everything you need to know. If you want to listen, go there. You want to watch, go there. Just click on that banner above. Also, HagmanStore.com for a copy of my book. Thank you so much for the many reviews and ratings, honest reviews and ratings on Amazon. Appreciate that. Also, if you want me to send you an autograph book, I will. Go to HagmanStore.com, or if you want to just get a Kindle or paperback at Amazon, you can do that too. Appreciate your support in that direction. Also, a couple other things real quick before I bring Stan on. This Sunday, Patreon meeting, 7 p.m. Eastern time. That's this Sunday, Patreon meeting, 7 p.m. Eastern time, first Sunday of the month. I'm going to have some special announcements. It's going to be kind of somewhat like last time, except I've got some additional information to provide. Now, we're going to be coming off of all I can say is a massive investigative weekend that I'm not going to get into because it's a current investigation. So, but I will provide broad brush updates on that Patreon segment, and also incorporate some of the previous Patreon images from in case you missed last time. Tune in this time. All right, that's number one. Number two, Eric the Tech was funding me today earlier about it was such a busy day we had. I had, of course, the bloodstained shirt that I had to change before airtime, and it wasn't my blood. And he's, I think, were you making fun of me? Were you making fun of me? Huh?
Were you? I was just saying that that's your story.
That's my story, yeah. I walked in the studio with a bloodstained shirt. I had to change because, seriously, a woman fell, and actually not once but twice, and she was, I'm not sure. You know, look, it's just, anyway, I was helping her, and funny story, okay. Initially, I thought someone had attacked her, okay, because I heard her screaming. I was downtown, and there were a couple of people around. I thought one of them had attacked her. So I went to grab my, and I even hate to admit this, I went to grab my gun. I didn't have it with me. I'm going to tell you what, if you have a carry permit.
That's very, very rare for you.
Very rare. So after that, had to do something else. So I did put my gun on. But yesterday, we had to do some things. Eric the Tech and myself had to do some things. And we found ourselves where we qualified. Well, so we had to qualify on the range, okay, just briefly. So when I put my gun in the second time, or the first time, which should have been the second time, I realized I hadn't reloaded from the range. So I'm walking around with a gun that had an empty magazine. And by the way,
you'll get there.
So did Eric.
Yeah, I forgot to reload. Well, the one I carry in my vehicle, I forgot to reload.
And
I reloaded all the other ones.
And may I say this real quick, and then I'm impinging on Stan's time. There was an incident yesterday. Eric actually received a gunshot wound at the range yesterday. And by gunshot wound, I'm not talking about a through and through or
just a little piece of shrapnel.
Shrapnel. He got hit by a piece of shrapnel.
Yeah, my arm. So I wasn't wearing long sleeves. It was 100 degrees outside. I'm fine though.
Yeah. All right. Never mind. It had to do with qualifying, and so we were there, and it was because we. It seems like we can't plan anything, so we had to. We found ourselves there. We found ourselves with the proper people, proper equipment, and we said, "Okay, let's hurry up and do this and qualify, get out of here." And that's what happened. So, but Eric's been really working hard behind the scenes, and I appreciate that. One more thing, folks. You know, with all the headlines going on, with all of the monetary uncertainty out there, and there's a lot, isn't there? If you go to Stan's website, standale.com, and check Holly's headlines out there, the economy isn't what it seems to be. So here's what I'm a big proponent of: getting your house in order, your financial house in order. And if you're like most of us, you carry a balance on your credit cards. And if those cards come with high interest rates, you know what? You are in need of my friends at Lightstream. You can lower your interest rate and serve with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Rates start from 9.93% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and you get in some cases, you get the money the same day, and there are absolutely no fees. Here's what you need to take advantage of this very special offer just for my listeners. Apply now, get a special interest rate discount, and save even more. The only way to get this discount is go to lightstream.com/Hagman. Two ends on Hagman. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. LIGHTSTREAM, lightstream.com/Hagman, two ends on Hagman. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 5.93% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You will thank me later. You will be glad you did. And there it is on your screen for those watching at home. All right. Playing along with us right here in the studio audience. And of course, as I like to say, the man, the myth, the legend, the real Indiana Jones. That's right. Stan Dale.
Before he comes on.
Oh, yes.
Doesn't Joe Biden have a word for us?
Oh, Stan, real quick, because the news is heavy. Our hearts are heavy. Joe Biden, in case you missed it, folks, and if you're looking at the hot headlines, I don't think you would, but let's listen to what Joe Biden had to say yesterday in his words of wisdom. Go ahead.
Does immigration need to be in reconciliation? Must it be in reconciliation? What must be what? What must be what? What must be what? What must be what?
Immigration.
Good to know. Good to know. My butts, my wife. All right. With that, Stan Dale. Stan, thanks for holding over, and I apologize for imposing upon your time.
Wow, how can I follow that?
Please don't.
Did he really say that?
Well, okay. Snopes is issuing a non-denial. Okay, they're saying, I don't know what he said. And frankly, you know what? I looked at it in context. I don't know what the heck he said. I don't know, but okay.
All right.
At least he doesn't tweet mean tweets out.
Right. Well, he can't figure out how to work it anyway. You know, you're talking about Holly's News today. Well, every day, 6 days a week. It's usually pretty grim. There's just not a lot of good news, but she does manage to find some and put that up to kind of ease the pain of the news that dominates the news, the bad news that dominates it. Today, there are a number of things on her site I will try to address toward the end of this, but one of the things that I want to address now is Russia. There are several slides on our show images page that, excuse me, are relative to their warfare, you know, their weapons and their buildup for that. Slide 63, Eric, it says Russian President Vladimir Putin warned enemies that the Navy, his Navy, was ready to launch an unpreventable strike. The Russian leader added that Russia has secured its place among the world's leading naval powers, including by developing the latest hypersonic, faster-than-sound precision weapons, still unrivaled in the world. Russia says the Zircon missile will be capable of flying at 9 times the speed of sound and have a range of 621 miles. Now, you know, going hypersonic, I don't know what the arc is when they launch it, you know, how long it takes to turn a corner at that speed, but maybe they just launch it direct line of sight. But if they were to aim one of those at one of our ships, I don't think that we could stop it at 9 times the speed of sound. It'd hit you before you knew it was coming, at least sound-wise. And you might be able to track it on the ship's radar for a brief second. But the fact that he's even bragging about this, I'm pretty sure means they've got much better than that. We know they had hypersonic, and we've got hypersonic too, but I don't know that we go 9 times the speed of sound. And just, I got to tell you, if you were in an aircraft going at that speed and tried to turn a corner, it'd darn near flatten you against the wall with the G-forces. I mean, it wants to go in a straight line at the target and, you know, gradual arcs maybe, but, you know, it's a very heavy thing mass-wise when it comes at you, not counting the explosives on it. But anyway, they've got that. And then I look at slide 56. They're announcing this new jet fighter. Now, that jet fighter is mainly meant for like India and other customers that buy, you know, weapons from Russia. Now, this is not going to be the ultimate of their, you know, Air Force or their fighter force, whatever. But it just shows you here the countries in that thing, you know, that tell you where they're selling them. This one can do 1.8 to 2 times the speed of sound. And again, if I was a pilot in that, I'd have to be pretty fit because the pressure on you would be immense when you go to turn a corner. And you've got to do it reasonably carefully so you don't rip the wings off at those speeds. Right.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. Yeah. I'm looking at that.
Yeah, and they're making money off of selling weapons to, you know, Afghanistan, India, Iran, Iraq. I mean, they sell it to anybody. And they're commercial things that they're releasing. But you got to be reasonably certain that what they have in the back room for their real warfare weapons are much more advanced than, you know, what we're seeing there.
Didn't you say this, like, World War III is going to be, like, very quick? Didn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, you can put that in reference to the revelation mention about the destruction of Babylon. I think we are modern, you know, mystery Babylon, but it says it's destroyed in 1 hour, you know. And also like Damascus is overnight, you know, destroyed. And we're talking about big burning bombs of some sort that, you know, you can't avoid. So, yeah. Nuclear war in this arena is going to be very fast. And you know what? Humans aren't going to really be in charge of that once they push the button to go to war, to attack, because darn near every major country that has the weapons we're afraid of has artificial intelligence, supercomputers that have been programmed to think like their host country, you know, like whatever their priorities are. And it makes decisions so fast based on so much information coming in so rapidly that a human can't compete with it. So when you're fighting AI, artificial intelligence, in a war, it's going to be AI against AI against AI, and it's going to be a madhouse, and it will be over fairly quickly. And the best supercomputer and weapons releases wins. You know, it's, yeah. Yeah, now let me see. There's one other thing I wanted to mention about them. Russia. Slide 44. Russia is threatening to leave the International Space Station. Why? In response to ongoing American sanctions and new ones imposed by the Biden administration, Roscosmos, the Russian space agency, it could be spy agency too, called for the Russian state to leave the ISS. Now, yesterday, the Russians on the ISS, released the docking port they'd had there for 20 years. That's how people used to get up there and land and do EVAs after that. And that's been disconnected from the International Space Station and thrown down to the surface of the Earth over the Pacific Ocean, where it landed and burned up. You can see 45, slide 45, you can see a picture of it that they grabbed from the space station as it started to burn up. And if you click on the text there, you can get over to see a picture of what it looked like. There we go. Yeah, there's a video of it down at the bottom there. And that's what burned up over the Pacific Ocean. It's a tidy way to get rid of your garbage, I guess. It's just burned up in the atmosphere. Sadly, there are tens of thousands of little boats, bolts and metal fragments and stuff, even plastic, orbiting the Earth from, you know, things that have blown up or broken or whatever. And those things are out there, and they're dangerous to, you know, other spacecraft going up to space stations. If these things get out of their current orbit, they become like bullets, each of these little pieces at 17,500 miles an hour, or if you got a counter-orbiting object at 35,000 miles an hour. These are bullets that put holes through, you know, walls of whatever craft it hits. So I wish we could just take all those things that are dangerous like that in a big net and then throw them out over the Pacific like this and burn them up and clean the orbits around us. But anyway, that's Russia. They're going to be building their own space station. They're not going to play with us anymore. The Chinese have built their own. I think India is looking at it as well. So we've got a lot of traffic up there, and it makes me remember the Hopi prophecy about the Blue Kachina, well, at the time of the Blue Kachina star, that a habitation in the heavens will fall to the earth and burn up. And that sounds to me like, you know, a space station of some sort. I don't know whose it will be, but I suspect it might be the ISS with, you know, Americans on it. Okay, that's Russia. And this tells you, and with the articles that Holly's got on her news page, other things about Iran and China, both these places are in league with Russia, and they're in the Middle East, they're in Africa. We're being outgunned at every turn, and this administration is doing everything it can to destroy us, you know, by COVID, by illegal immigrants, you know, which are a lot of them Iranians and stuff coming in, young men to be, you know, an armed force in this country against us. And we need President Trump in the office that he legally won. We need to get rid of this crowd that's in there. They've stolen our government. And if you look at slide 64, Trump says he released a statement on Monday saying U.S. Senate Republicans not to agree to an infrastructure deal until after we get proper election results. Now, I think he's referring to the 2020. But we can't wait that long. At this point in time, there's going to be an uprising, and I'm sure it will be armed from various, you know, supporters of the Constitution, patriots, we can't stop that. I mean, that's, they're pushing our buttons so hard they want us to rebel, have open rebellion against the illegal government running this country at the moment. Now, that's what the Soros and other world globalist planners want. They want us to create civil disorder, requiring that the people that are in control of the White House at the moment issue, you know, martial law, and they use probably, you know, state militias rather than military, you know, official military, so they can get around the posse comitatus. And they are going to come after us with martial law. And then the fight will be on for one and all. We'll be in active civil war and we'll be in chaos. And at that time, China, Russia, Iran, who wants to help them, will all be able to move in, destroy our major cities with EMP pulses and nuclear weapons. And after they've done the softening up, which only take a few minutes, then they're going to start landing troops on the east west coast at the docks of China on the west side, and Iran and Russia on the eastern coast. So these, they're going to come for us. And that will be the destruction that kills Mystery Babylon. So it's important that when the country is destroyed, that the islands of people that have, you know, like solar power and things like that, auxiliary power, that they stay intact so that the communities around them that live through these things can come to them and they can form new local tribes, if you wish, to endure or to go forward in what is left of America. There won't be much, and I suspect that most of the action of where people will go, according to what the Hopi say, they'll come over to the Four Corners region, into Colorado and northern Arizona, that sort of stuff. Just look at the Four Corners. So this is very important, and you know, I don't want to say let's go get them, you know, let's go get the baddies, but this is what we're left with. Either sit and do nothing and let these clowns that have taken over the government, or the puppets really, destroy us, you know, come in with injections that are mandatory and, you know, enslave us. And we just, even people that aren't patriots are going to be thinking, we can't allow this. You know, we've got to stop this. And Holly and I talk about this every day, you know, and at the end of the day and talk about the news and we shake our head. What more can these guys do before someone takes action to stop it?
And
that's exactly,
that's,
as I said,
the
what
question.
Soros wants.
You know, and you know, Stan, and maybe, you know how, certainly you do not have to agree with me on this, and nor does anyone else out there. But I'm to the point now where if we are going to get it on, all right, because everyone's dug in. I mean, the left is dug in. We have been overtaken in our government with communist, socialist, globalist morons that want to enslave us. We're headed for another lockdown. They're going to force us to take the, you know, jab juice, all right, that 50, you know, the whole bunch of medical doctors, a heck of a lot smarter than Eric and I put together, you know, just one, say, look, this is, you know, this is going to be bad for us. In my view, Stan, I'm not going to sit back and take this crap, okay? Now, and I don't care who knows this. I don't care if the FBI is listening. I'm not going to take this crap. You're not going to, you want to inject me with steel, lead's coming your way. And that's just the way it is. I'm not going to, you know, and it's not sitting behind a microphone or a keyboard acting tough. That's a statement of fact. I'm not going to allow that to happen. And most assuredly not going to allow that to happen to my grandchildren or children. So I guess my question to you, Stan, is, you know, what's worse, waiting for it, you know, being a spectator, or saying, okay, we're coming after, I mean, you know what, we're not going to let this happen and we're going to fight. You want to fight? Let's fight. Let's throw down. Let's get it on. I mean, is that, am I nuts? Don't answer that. Don't answer that.
What a leading question.
Yeah.
You know, this reminds me of a Star Trek, the original series, the Kobayashi Maru syndrome, where you fight an enemy all around your ship, and you have no way of winning. If you save this crowd, then you get killed, or if you don't, then they get killed. It's a no-win situation. Because if we do stand up and do what we need to do, then we're going to weaken the country, and we're going to get invaded by powers that will absolutely crush us. So, damned if you do, damned if you don't. I would feel better, I suppose, if we did something, because I just don't want to sit here and let them just run over us and take us over. You make us slaves. But I know what's coming when we do that.
Yeah, but, and I don't know about you, but I'm not getting any younger. Okay, so You know, they're gonna have to. If I'm gonna fight, there, I'm gonna have to fight for my hover round. You know.
Well, I understand that, and fortunately, we've got a great number of young people that are waking up to what's happening, and they aren't happy either.
Yeah.
But it will be important for those of us that are prepared and, you know, stock provisions, you know, lead, food, medicine, water, to be able to help those who gather around us to make little islands of resistance. We've done all we can now. Then people that are just now waking up to getting prepared are, you know, they're kind of out of luck because freeze-dried foods are in short supply, you know, ammunition's in very short supply. Guns, I guess their guns are still available here and there, but, you know, a location, are you going to move to another state to be a better located place for what's coming? You know, like we've got a gazillion people moving into our neighborhood, into Pueblo West. I mean, there's like six houses within a stone's throw of us that are all brand new going up. And our house prices over here are skyrocketing. Our house has, in the space of 6 months, has gone up 20 to 25%. Now that's a huge amount of money because people are offering, you know, ridiculous prices to buy a house. Our next door neighbor sold their house and went to Florida 2 months ago, and they sold to a man and woman who came to them and said, what's your asking price? Okay. We'll give you $30,000 more than your asking price. Give us the deed. I mean, this is desperate. So.
Wow.
People that are wanting to move are going to face increasing prices in the choice spots to be. And, you know, then they've got to make the move. Then they've got to move all their stuff in if they can get a mover because a lot of the moving companies are swamped.
Yep.
You know, I pity those that are just now waking up. And so we're saying that those of us that have prepared need to be prepared also, when people start just running to be able to accept some of them to join their little group, their neighborhood or whatever, to make local defense and build a tribe, you know, tribal defense. Yeah. Anyway, that's.
And I thank you for pointing that out. And I think I've got a space in my heart for people who are living alone, you know, by themselves, kind of like, okay, renting, maybe they own the house, but they're alone. And I feel for them, and I really want, you know what, Stan, I want to be able to help them. By the way, I just want to say, give a shout out to Karen in Rome. You know, I love you, Karen. Love you like a sister. Okay. So Karen in Rome, who listens to you, Stan, listens to this program. Interesting as well. Karen, come on and, live in my town or live in Stan's town. Anyway, yeah, And folks, it's national, or it's, today happens to be, and if I can just announce this, National New Jersey Day. Okay, now I spent time in New Jersey. I don't know about you, Stan, but I did. I'll just put a period there. Okay, National New Jersey. What does that even mean? But anyway.
Well, go to our website, to Holly's, standio.com, and you'll see a live link there that you can click on to see what New Jersey Day is all about. You know, if you're interested.
And thank you, Holly, for pointing that out. Yesterday, I think, was Aunt's and Uncle's Day or something. I can't remember. But
yes, she says yes, it was Aunt's and Uncle's Day.
Yeah, she's good. She's good. She doesn't miss a trick, boy.
No, she doesn't, you know.
And I have to say this real quick. Holly, I got lots of email saying, I was great to hear you last week. So, just saying.
Give a shout out, my dear.
Thanks a bunch, Doug.
Okay.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
I didn't know whether Mike picked it up or not. But,
she's a great lady, and you guys are great. So, okay, I didn't mean to. Okay, so go ahead.
All right. Another thing adding to the urgency of the situation over in Israel, slide 58. Israel strike killed Iranian commander Hezbollah terrorist. The strike on the western Syria town of Homs, H-O-M-S, killed Hezbollah commander Imad al-Amin and senior IRGC figure Ahmed Qureshi. Now, this is really ramping up the problem between Israel and Iran. You know, it was probably not as bad as when General Soleimani was killed, it's going to be a close second to that. And this is just ramping up the need for a conflict between Iran and Israel. And after the change of government, the illegal change of government here, the Biden administration, after they've taken over the handling of the Middle East situation, Saudi Arabia has kind of backed down on being a friend to Israel, and all their allied 35 Middle East nations. And the Lebanon has stepped into shooting missiles into the northern part of Israel. The situation is tense. It's going to force Israel to use its nuclear arsenal, its magic weapons, against the invading forces when they get on the ground and come for Israel. And that day is getting very close. And with Russia being down there backing Syria and Iran, behind the scenes, the things are just at powder keg. Another reason for me to believe that we don't have long until we have major conflicts on the planet involving nuclear weapons. Now then.
Can I ask you, Stan, nuclear weapons, are there such things, real quick, as mini nukes, nukes that act like nukes are nukes, but don't maybe register as nukes?
Well, look, in the 60s and late 50s, there were suitcase nuclear devices that were smuggled into the United States by Russia at that time. And now then, we're so much more advanced in the technology of it that, you can have small nukes. They're what normally they call them tactical nukes. And they can shoot them from a cannon. They can shoot, into a war field, into a battle zone with a nuke and wipe out a whole army.
Maybe just ask differently very quickly. Do you think that we have in the recent, we'll say 5 years, used tactical nukes or used nuclear weapons that no one knows about? Is that possible?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Okay. All right.
There are types we've known about for 50 years, like neutron bombs, nuclear bombs, and they're called real estate bombs. And small versions of that, you could drop it over, explode it over a small city and kill all living things, but leave the buildings and streets and stuff intact. The neutrons, neutrinos go through your body and they deionize like your nervous system and you drop dead. And so all they'd have to do is go clean up the dead bodies and stuff. But, that's one kind of we've known about. But I'm sure there are others that are things like weather bombs or, environmental bombs that cause local earthquakes or, a hole in the ozone layer that causes everybody to be cooked by cosmic radiation and super UV. All these kind of things have been thought of. And how many of them have been developed to the point of being used in a real war? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, go back to 1900 and 20 or 30 when Nikola Tesla was around. When he died in 1943 in January, the Custodian of Alien Affairs came in, and also we think other branches of the intelligence agency here came in and located 80 cases of his documents and stuff, including especially things on advanced warfare using an ionized beam from his Wardenclyffe Tower that he could shoot out maybe 100 airplanes 100 miles away, maybe 200 miles away, I think it was. And so all his papers with these new warfare ideas were confiscated. And only 60 of the cases have even been returned over to Belgrade to the Tesla Museum. But at that time, they grabbed these things in 1943, and we were in the middle of World War II. If you then go forward to 1960-61, the United States was already at that time building frequency weapons for communication and other types of activity. One was the Navy Project Sanguine up in the Dakotas. Another one was the Exmouth Cape in West Australia. And you can go there today and use Google Earth and go over to the northern tip of the Exmouth Peninsula, and you can see a Tesla coil. This is Tesla coil, right? A 5-megawatt site with a coil that you're talking about miles, in walking around and the ground plane and everything, 13 towers on it. That was, I'm sure, a result of the government, our government, getting hold of Tesla's papers and notations for how to use things for warfare. I think that the Exmouth cape was primarily communications, but it could have been used for other things as well, as far as broadcasting electricity to submarines and things like that at low frequencies.
Wow.
It reminds me of a story very quickly about the Project Sanguine up in Dakota there. When they were turning on this electric field, it was many acres of this electric antenna to make a low frequency broadcast around the planet, you know, like an ELF, high frequency, mm-hmm. High energy beam. It ionized the air, not only at the base there, but in the surrounding farms. And there was two farmers that complained while they were testing this this device, because one was working on his barn, which had a tin roof and wooden sides. And so he was up on a tin roof, which was conductor, like a capacitor, on top of, you know, wood, which was more or less an insulator. And so he was being charged up and thrown off of his barn frequently by the charge buildup that was coming from when they were testing their weapon. So he complained, and they came out and fitted him with a belt with a chain on it and goes down to a post in the ground, a ground, so that he didn't build up a charge and fly off his roof. And then the other guy that I read about said that this broadcast of this high voltage energy had caused his toilet to accept the charge, and it would leap up and bite him on the butt, you know, while he was in the middle of business. So he complained, and they figured out a way to ground him as well when he needed to go. Humorous, but pointing at things like Tesla systems, which he proposed to electrify the world, to broadcast electricity all over the world for people to use, you know, download. The problem is, these two guys that complained to the naval thing, they are illustrations of what would happen if we had broadcast energy all over the planet, because you can't control the shape of objects. I mean, even your teeth might be receiving it if you're the right, you know, size tooth and right amount of filling or whatever. This was a failing of being able to broadcast power like that. Now, there are ways eventually, I think, to do that. But in fact, there's a documentary on the History Channel now. Look at slide 47. Watch season one of the History Channel's production of the Tesla Files. Now, I've viewed the first three, and they, you know, are looking at conspiracy and how Tesla's inventions and stuff, a lot of them were classified and never given back to Belgrade, you know, to Yugoslavia. But other than that, there are some interesting factors about his life, and I think it's worth viewing. Understand that it's, you know, it's staged, and the things that they're doing, like broadcasting power through the earth, they did not do it exactly like Tesla did. I know, because I've studied his work and have one of the bigger private libraries about his inventions and his thoughts. But, yeah, they lit a couple of bulbs, you know, light bulbs, a few feet, probably 50 feet away from a Tesla transmitter. But Tesla's idea was to fit bulbs that were 26 miles away from his ward, from his Tesla coil in Colorado Springs in 1899. And he would wind a little local coil and a capacitor to each light globe, or to groups of them, so that they were tuned to the same frequency as the Tesla transmitter 26 miles away. And they would turn on when he turned on his Tesla coil there in Colorado Springs, 26 miles away. These lamps, you know, or light globes would light up because they would be receiving that at that frequency. So that's a good idea, as I said, except there are problems, practical problems with shapes and conductivity of various things around the home and in business, which would accept the energy too when you don't want it to, and cause arcing and fires and whatever. All right. Anyway, I did a documentary on Tesla stuff.
You did.
In 1982.
Yes.
Called Eye of the Storm. That's in slide 46.
And folks, you go to slide 46, and younger Stan Deo, but just as handsome, and even more today. Huh? But watch that video, because it's an incredible video, in my view. And great job, by the way. Great job on that. It's
you know.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you. We certainly interviewed a lot of people, friends and relative, even in fact, of Nikola Tesla. In that documentary that you're doing there, you'll see an interview, a very brief one, with Trebejevich, Turbo, Bill Turbo, they call him. That's his Americanization of his name, but he was Tesla was his granduncle, And Bill Turbo's real name is Bill Trebejevic, a very bright family of inventors as well from Yugoslavia. And in talking to him, I did, anyway, when he was younger, we got to hear personal things about Tesla that you just won't read in the textbooks or anything, about how he was such a nice guy, and Uncle Nicky, he called him. Toward the end of his life, Uncle Nicky couldn't eat like solid foods like steak and meats. His stomach wouldn't take it, so he was drinking warm milk a lot of the time, which resulted, of course, in his emaciated look as he aged there and died in 1943. But Uncle Nicky, you know, he was an interesting character. Personally, he met with a guy named, that guy, I'll tell you in a minute, who was a cosmologist, a philosopher about how nuclear physics really works, and a guy that Einstein thought was one of the greatest minds around, and a theory that Einstein wished he'd used to go on from his unified theory, field theory into wave mechanics to create atoms and stuff like that. Walter Russell was the guy. And Walter Russell and Tesla met between 1921 and 1930 somewhere in New York, because they both lived in the same town. And Tesla said, this guy, Walter Russell, is what he is trying to tell you. And he told Russell this too. He says, don't give it to the people, because it'll take 1,000 years before they realize and appreciate what you've done in modeling the universe and how it works, you know, under God's control. But it's little things like that that I learned when doing that documentary. And when I was even in Belgrade at the museum there, we were given special permission. They locked me in a room with Tesla's personal effects that they had at the time. And that included 10,000 photographs of his work and 100,000 documents, letters of patents, all that kind of stuff. His clothes, his cane, his top hat, you know, all that kind of stuff. And now they've got more of the trunks have been returned with his stuff, and they've got 200,000 documents. I don't know how many photographs there at the Tesla Museum. It's, if you ever get the chance, well, the world holds together long enough, it would be worth a visit to see and read, all the stuff that he did and the videos they've got there to show as well. Anyway, that's enough on Tesla.
Yeah, and now, but folks, now you know why Stan's the guy. Stan is the man. Stan is the real Indiana Jones. Stan has been there. He's done that. He has more than the T-shirt. He's got Mr. Tesla's top hat. So, all right. Go ahead, sir.
Well, actually, they gave me some of his soiled white gloves. He would wear it once. If it got dirty, he'd throw it away or in the trash. And I had a few of his ties. One of them looked like he'd spilled gravy down the front of it, for what it's worth. But, there were a few of those things. I shared it with some of the other Tesla enthusiasts when I got back to this country, because they treasured it. He was such an incredibly smart man. He and Walter Russell, both had out-of-body experiences. Tesla was when he was probably 11 or 12, as I recall. He caught a bacterial infection, or it caused a fever so high that he was like comatose for 2 or 3 days, and they thought they were going to lose him. When he came back, he had this incredible ability in his mind to think of an object, and it would appear in the air in front of him in 3D color. He could move it around with his mind. And that stood with him all the rest of his life, and was one of the reasons that he was so brilliant. But he was ostracized because, like with the workers in his factory, he would say, okay, look, I want you to build this AC generator and put this little point over here and connect a wire here and turn this down to that size. And he was motioning in the air. He was touching the parts of it in the air in front of him. And they were all saying, could you draw that down for us? Because we can't quite see what you're seeing. And he would draw it down, the whole diagram, in about a fat postage stamp space on a big white sheet of paper. See, now, you see this? There's what I'm talking about. And he'd rumple it up, throw it in the trash, and go to lunch. When he left the building, the staff would go over there and pull it out of the trash and try to figure out what the heck he meant. In talking to Westinghouse, to the public relations fellow for Westinghouse, who bought a lot of the patents from Tesla, I think for $250,000 in those days, something like that, to make the generators that harness Niagara Falls. The engineers at Westinghouse got the patents, but they said, he's a genius. He's got the concept, but he doesn't give us the nuts and bolts. You know, he just sells us a patent and we have to figure out how to make it work. And that was straight from Westinghouse saying, you know, he left a lot undone. We had to actually think ourselves and put it together because he had it all in his mind. It didn't transmit it properly. And Walter Russell, he and Tesla were friends. And Walter Russell had an out-of-body experience when he was a young man in the forest near where he lived there on the East Coast. I think it might have been Virginia. I can't remember whether it was in Newark. But anyway, they both had this change of their mind when they had this out-of-body, you know, or in Tesla's case, this illness that hurt them and changed their minds, you know, functioning-wise. Anyway, I guess there's a few of us that had the out-of-body experience that talk about it, and mine was in equations and energy and flying saucers and universe, how it worked, simple things like that. But a lot of what I saw was what Walter Russell saw, and he published it in books about harmonics of how things work and waveforms and how atoms have spin and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, I digress because I love all this stuff.
You know, and your passion shows, and Eric the Tech just whispered in my ear that he would love to, him and I come out and chronicle your experiences in your life in that fashion, because you're such a rich, you're rich in information, you're rich in, all the other facets of fascination. And, you know, you would be people would, boy, we could sell tickets for that. I mean, seriously, you know, that'd be a great thing because you are so full of knowledge and information and experiences. Very rich. So.
Well, maybe so. If the world holds together, I doubt we'll have time, but a number of people have asked me to do that. And when I was thinking about this Tesla thing, watching that documentary and then thinking all the stuff that I'd done with that project and then others after that, you know, I thought, wow. Yeah, I did that back then. You know, you're so busy doing things, you don't just really kind of, you know, dwell on it. You go on to the next project. But it caused me to reflect. And you are right. There's probably a lot of things that I've experienced and done and invented that have never been kind of told.
Both you and Holly and Eric just again said, make sure Holly's in there too. So,
yeah. She has been an integral part of the last 22 years of my life. We've formed a team that was meant to be, each having, you know, talents and abilities, you know, to bring to this, whatever this Deo Enterprises thing is that we are. And, you know, she's right on board and ahead of me in a lot of things, and especially in the news, because since she was a young girl, she has been interested in gathering news and being able to share it with people. So she's had training for a number of years in doing this.
You guys
anyway,
are fantastic. All right, go ahead.
A couple other things. She said to me, actually, probably last month while we were working the garden a bit, she says, now, see, this is what I'm talking about. She says, look at how bright the sun is today, how white it is outside. It's not yellow like it used to be. And I explained to her, well, that's increased ultraviolet radiation from the sun, and just wear your sunglasses and wear long sleeves so you don't burn your skin. And don't stay any longer, about 15 minutes at a time. Well, she ignored most of that. But anyway, that was my advice. Well, we were talking about it the other day, and if you look at slide 39, it's just the text of it there. It says, sensitive skin notices. These are, that was, if you click on the text, it goes to talk about, you know, from NASA about the changes in the Earth's magnetic field and what it does. And one of the things it does is it weakens the ionosphere, which shields us from ultraviolet from the sun. And I've talked on your show several times in the last, 8-10 years, about when you have like the South Atlantic anomaly open up a hole in the ionosphere, it releases or it lets UV pass through, and we're having increased UV into a spectrum, which started in 1992. So when you weaken the ionosphere, the radiation from the sun, the UV, can get through when the ozone layer thins. And that is producing mutations in plants. It's causing plants to die. It's burning them too quick. We've seen it in our garden. It's no mistake. And so I went over to the Climate Prediction Center to see, you know, what causes or what symptoms, I guess, of this ionospheric increase there are. Now, if you look at slide 37, click on that. It's a big picture, but it's from 1994 to 2017 showing over Denver the increase in ultraviolet penetration to the extreme levels to where they're harmful. Now, this starts somewhere around 2000 and, let's see here, 2006, 2005. No, 2006 is when it started to penetrate in the 11 and above toward, you know, the 12 ratio. And if you look at that, after that, it gets worse and worse until, like, where we are now, well, in 2017, you're really up into the average of UV radiation of 12, extreme. And so then if you go back to the show images page to slide 38, I picked for the year 2017, because that's all the data they had current on these plots, various cities. And the cities, like if you look at like Hawaii, that's the first one, and look at San Juan, Puerto Rico, the two of them there at the very top, those are places not to live. I mean, it, you know, plants and people have a lot of trouble surviving in that kind of environment. Look at that. They're punching up into the 13s and 14s in San Juan. You know, and if you look at Tampa, Florida, it's up into the 12s, 12 plus. That's in 2017. Alabama, Mobile, Alabama, Salt Lake City, Utah, those are all the cities, Houston. And they're, of course, near equatorial regions, but that's where this ultraviolet penetration is very high. And so in my mind, I think, well, I think I'd give some of these cities a miss, or at least be prepared to wear skin cover and eyeglasses that wrap around to keep, you know, shielding from the ultraviolet to, so it doesn't cause cataracts and stuff. Anyway, we're seeing it in the sun. I mean, it's, the slides 40 through 42 show today's sun with the magnetic fields. And I was watching it in slide 42. You can see that the three active regions facing us, pointing right at us at the southern hemisphere of the planet, it produced two B-class flares coming out of it. But this is proof that what I've been telling you is happening. The sun is changing, and it's not changing for the best. You know, in slide 50, they've got a picture there. If you click on the picture, it was taken by a guy, I guess that's Ruma Yantsev, sounds like a Russian, but he took pictures of the sun at various times during the season, showing what the color of it appeared to be from the kind of pinky white upper left down to the yellow on the lower right. And so when you think of yellow sunshine, it's really a matter of the atmosphere and what the condition of the atmosphere was at the time. But now, the condition of the atmosphere is such that it's not yellow sun, but it's white, blue, you know, very faint white, blue. And it's not like the old days when you could go out in the yellow sunshine and play. But it's always been the same color. I mean, if you look out in space at all these stars, you'll see the odd one that has a tint of color, this red or yellow or white, whatever. But our sun has been whitish because of the multispectral emissions from it all the time. It's just that what we see through the ionosphere is different now because it's thinning. And you can read about that ozone layer and how it protects us in slide 51. Go to the site and look at those, different pictures of the sun at different times of the year.
Sam, what does that mean in terms of CMEs and how that affects Earth?
Oh, yeah. Well, she's right. What does it do about, CMEs? Because the ionosphere is thinning, I've talked about this before, but I need to emphasize this is going to reach us a lot more than it did before because our shield is weakening. The CMEs, you know, releasing solar wind and stuff, they're going to get more of that through to the surface than before because of this thinning of the ionosphere. Right. So this affects things like what Tim and I have been working on with this atmospheric energy collector like T. Henry Murray was working on. It thought it might overload such devices. And this is why we'll be working on that. We've developed the MP shield to protect our energy source because we didn't want it to be flooded by sudden impulses, you know, from the solar wind and also from, you know, electromagnetic radiation in the ultraviolet range coming down and causing, you know, charge cascades in our device. So it just underscores that we designed that EMP shield for such times as we're seeing already with the sun to protect our power supply. And if it were solar or, you know, a generator, you know, or wind, you still need to protect your power supplies because of the surges of charge into our atmosphere. They're going to make, you know, lightning flashes. They're going to make cascading charges on your devices. So you do need, even if it's not a normal EMP, you do need to protect your devices, like your ham radios and things especially, from overloaded charges coming from the atmosphere. And the ultimate place, of course, is the sun releasing it through our atmosphere. And this thinning ultraviolet layer, I mean, boy, I've been in underneath an ultraviolet, you know, hole or a hole in the ionosphere over in Perth in Australia. And I got to tell you, it is nasty. It hits your skin like a bunch of little fine point needles hitting your skin. Even through my blue jeans, I felt the pinpricks from the ultraviolet penetration. And the government over there even advised housewives, if you're going to hang out your white laundry, wear sunglasses to protect your eyes because of the ultraviolet. And this is going to be widespread over the planet. It's not going to be just one hole. We're going to see a thinning of the entire ionosphere because of the Earth's magnetic field weakening. I can't stress that enough. You've got to prepare for these eventualities.
That's why even on cloudy days, we talk about you feel all squinty. You can't look straight out at anything. You have to squint because the sun is so bright.
Right. That's the ultraviolet getting through even cloud cover. Yeah, as I said earlier, Holly pointed out to me because she's outside and working more often than I am, and she'll say, "Come look at the sun, you know, or the sunlight out here." And she's right; it hurts your eyes because of the UV getting through. Even on cloudy days, you have to squint sometimes when it's coming through. Anyway, that's on that.
One quick question on that: Would this be responsible for any of the change of seasons? And by that I mean right now it seems where I'm at, the squirrels are burying their nuts. Pardon the joke, folks, it's not a joke. Earlier the mums are coming up at a weird time. The tiger lilies are, you know, seem to be done doing what they do. Everything's kind of accelerated. It seems like it's almost like instead of coming into August, it seems like we're coming into September. Does that have anything to do with what you're talking about?
Oh, I'm sure it does. The increased ultraviolet is also accompanied by other wavelengths around ultraviolet, that are getting through the ionosphere. Certainly we feel the heat of the sun, you know, it gets through and we collect it with our solar panels and things like that. But because we're getting more ultraviolet in these new wavelengths, things on the surface of the Earth are absorbing that energy. That's heat. It produces heat when they absorb it. And so this is changing the thermal patterns all over the planet, which give rise to tornadoes, to hurricanes, to violent thunderstorms, to droughts, to floods, in places they don't normally occur, at times of the seasons that they don't normally occur. So, yes, I'm positive this is affecting the change in our seasons and the climate. You know, it's in change, a state of flux right now. And being that we grow our own plants here and we watch the birds and the animals that live on our property, you know, come and go. But we watch the numbers of them, the times of year they appear when they make babies. This year we've had finches that had four families. They laid eggs, hatched them four times in this season, you know, in the last few months. So this tells you that didn't ever happen before. We'd have one season where they would come, mate, have babies, everybody go away. But, you know, the doves, finches, and the sparrows are having multiple broods of babies, and this is abnormal. Yeah, and she says we've been invaded by squirrels for the first time. Squirrels have been coming to eat the seeds with our birds, you know, and they get right in amongst the birds on the ground eating the seeds. And we've trapped three or four times. We've trapped squirrels, and we take them about 15 miles away so they can't find their way back and let them go because they're hogging the food. And actually, one squirrel got into the nest of a dove outside in our orchard and ate the eggs, or the egg that it had laid. Was there one or two eggs in that nest? You know, just one. And, you know, and another one, probably a blue jay came. We never had those before. and it killed the babies in another nest that was finches on our front door. So things are really topsy-turvy and changing. So, all probably related to what's happening.
Well, thank you for that. I apologize for taking you in a different direction, so thank you. Thank you.
That's all right. That's all right. I want you to – you'll probably have to look at this later, guys. Slides 59 through 61 is about the Kaaba, K-A-A-B-A, you know, the black box in Mecca there where the Muslims come to make their Hajj, their pilgrimage, to walk around it and kiss the stone. I investigated the stone, found out that it was broken. It was a broken fragment of, they think, what Abraham found in the desert from a meteor. But it's interesting that the father-in-law of Moses, the Midianite priest Jethro, was a priest of something that had to do with rectangular boxes to store, you know, information or you know, writings in. And now if you click on 59 there, there is a video that Avi Lipkin talks about this. Isn't it odd that the holy scriptures, the four that are put in it on the phylacteries of the Jews, Orthodox Jews, is a cube, a perfect cube, just like that, the black box that the Kaaba is. And it's interesting. Just read the links and stuff and see what's the links between Jethro and Moses and what the modern, you know, phylacteries are like. There's a lot of history that isn't written, as far as we know, about that relationship between Jethro and Moses. So interesting stuff there.
Thank you for that. Okay. And folks, do that, please. Make sure you bookmark Stan's show images page so you can go back and watch the videos. This is good stuff. This is information that you will find, I think, filling in some blanks that you may have. So it's always good. Thank you, sir.
Most certainly. How much time have we got left, sir?
We have, we've got about 4.5 minutes, about 4 minutes.
Oh, good, good.
4 minutes.
All right. Well, let me just say on this slide 61, where you click on that and see the recently released by the Saudi government high-resolution images of the black stone in the corner of the Kaaba. And what the history of that is amazing. You'll see in that slide in about the middle top row about 7 pieces of a black stone. The rest of the stuff in there is some kind of cement that one of the guys that finally recovered it from the thieves that took it and broke it, he molded it all together and formed this matrix around it to hold it so people could see it and touch it and kiss it. It is interesting because it is, you know, it's their holy relic, and it just comes from so far back that the history on it is choppy at best, but it was stolen by bandits from, you know, whoever was guarding it at the time back in the BC range. I can't remember what exact date, but you can read on these things and see. I think it's worth studying at the websites, these links I've given you, and also that video by Avi Lipkin, to see about the black stone and why they revere it so much. It's just strange. Anyway.
Wow.
Worth reading about.
Yeah.
Another thing happening in Israel, which is not, you know, warfare or anything like that, but it's preparation for the third temple and for the dye that's needed to dye the curtains and the garments of the high priest, you know, and the curtains that hang in the third temple. On Sunday, it says a woman went out to collect tiny insects, and you can see a picture of it in her fingers there, how tiny that insect is. These insects once a year produce flame-colored dye that was used in the temple. Tola Atshah, Sean, I think it's pronounced. It's usually translated as crimson wool, but the actual term refers to the worm, and that's that little insect, which is the source of the dye used for the temple curtain, as well as the garments of the high priest. The time-consuming work produced a minuscule amount of dye, but she is determined to continue working forward toward bringing the third temple with the, you know, proper colored dye for the robes. Everybody used to think it was red robes, right? But it's orange. Flame-colored is orange, not red.
Right.
A mute point, but, you know, they're getting down to the nitty-gritty, the fine details of this third temple, and she's doing her part. Now, also notice in slide 52, about Christians United for Israel, KUFI, which the Hagee family, Pastor Hagee, has formed. And it's a quote, and it's an article about Pastor Hagee, and he has said before, if there's a line to be drawn, you know, like in Alamo, this line then draw it around Christians and Jews together. We're going to be standing shoulder to shoulder, and there's no room for daylight to separate us. We stand united with Israel, and certainly we do too, and we're members of Kufi. And, God blesses those who bless Israel and curses those who curse Israel. So we want to be counted amongst those who bless Israel.
Amen.
Slide 53 very quickly.
Go ahead.
Okay, you can click and see the video interview, Billy Crone talking about how we're losing humanity, becoming, cyborgs in essence.
Stan, thank you so very much. I'm sorry we're out of time. Please, folks, click the show images page, go back to it, and watch them all, read them all. Thank you, Stan. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, folks, that'll do it for me. Have a great night, everyone. Remember, Patreon this Sunday. Special things coming up. Good night.